Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
I mean, if we were 29-0, I would say that we needed to win the other ones by more. It's never enough.
It's time for College Football Game Time. For the next 3 hours, we're taking a look at the world of college football from our dogs to around the nation. Join our hosts Chris Goforth, Randy McMichael, and John Chuckery as they break down the college football scene and give you an exclusive insight you can only find here. College Football Game Time is brought to you by Dos Equis. Make social distancing more interesting with Dos Equis, the most interesting beer. And by ESOG, Engineered Solutions of Georgia, a proud partner of the Georgia Bulldogs.
Let's test they will!
Yes, sir.
How bad do you want it? How bad do you want it?
College Football Game Time is on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
And welcome into Sports Radio 92.9 The Game on a beautiful Saturday morning with you. It is time for College Football Game Time as we get ready for week two in the SEC as everything went off well last weekend. We're going to be hanging out with you here, of course, until 12 o'clock today as we get ready for all of the college football action. Of course, we're brought to you by Dos Equis and ESOG. You can find us on social media. The station's at 929 The Game. He's at RandyMac81. I'm at JMCH316. He's at CGoForth1. Of course, Randy, John, and Chris here with you on this Saturday morning. I do want to remind you, too, that each week we've got our College Football Game Time podcast that we're doing. Randy was on with Chris this past week. Wes Durham is going to be joining Chris this coming week, so make sure you tune in and listen to all of that. Randy McMichael, good morning to you as we get ready for another beautiful Saturday, and it's Georgia-Auburn already. No, we're not going toward Thanksgiving. It's Georgia-Auburn, though.
Yeah, man, good morning, JC, man. Yeah, it's a beautiful Saturday. It's one of those Saturdays where you're like, dang, you wish you can be up on somebody's campus tailgating. I know there are some fans up there in Athens today tailgating, but, you know, just the whole, you know, college football pageantry, these are the days that you enjoy being a college football fan. But, yeah, I mean, it was a great week last week. It was fun, you know, some disappointments, some ups, some downs, some still a whole bunch of question marks. But, you know, it's another week. And just like you said, you know, I've been having fun with the Auburn fans all week talking about whining. But it does, as a Bulldog fan and a guy who played in the South's oldest rivalry, it does feel weird that we're playing Auburn today. It just does. And so, you know, but that's no excuse. You still got to go out there and get the job done. But, yeah, I mean, some upsets last week that I should have picked, but I kind of called. And, you know, so, I mean, but it's Saturday. It's college football, baby.
Got a busy show for you here this morning. We'll talk to Brandon Adams of Dog Nation coming up a little bit later on in this hour as we get ready for Georgia and Auburn. Then we'll flip over to the other side, and toward the end of the show, we will talk to Tequila Spikes, will join us coming up at 11:20. So we'll have everything covered for you on both sides of the aisle, as they say. Randy, let's take a look back to last week and what happened, especially in the SEC. I mean, obviously, it was a tale of two halves for Georgia. I'll say it like this. This is what I said this week on the show, Randy. That might have been the worst half of football I ever watched in my life. I mean, Wow. Sitting down and watching that, like, I can't believe that they owe me $10 or $12 of my life back for having to sit through and watch that mess.
It was brutal. It was a brutal first half from the quarterback, the offense, to the damn penalties. JC, it was horrible. But I was thinking about this last night and something that you said before the game about the quarterback play and about, you know, it's been 2 years since this young man's been out there. We're talking about DeJuan Mathis. And he looked like it was just the game was moving a little too fast for him. And then, you know, it was going too fast for him, but he was speeding up. This, it means that he was just rushing through everything. Had some costly mistakes, man. And, you know, after talking to Shock this week and Roddy DeBalsi, it was a lot of stuff going on outside of the quarterback play, but his was just obvious outside those penalties. But I mean, thank God for that top ranked defense, and thank God for Felipe Franks. You know, I mean, we knew I wasn't worried about us losing to Arkansas. It was not encouraging to watch that first half and watch Georgia's offense try and move the ball with all those damn mistakes.
I really do think, Randy, and was kind of talking about this, and I kind of had this discussion with Chip Towers this week, I do think that if Georgia had a better opponent week one, that DeJuan Mathis would not have been the starting quarterback.
That's a good point.
In that game. I think they really wanted to see what DeJuan Mathis could do, and they had the right opponent to get started. Because at the end of the day, I mean, you look at the score, and it really ended up being what it was supposed to be, 37-10.
Right.
It's how they got there. It's the process by which they got there. Their offensive line couldn't block anybody up front in the first half. They didn't run the football all that effectively. They didn't have real good quarterback play. It was just a cavalcade of just a mess. But you look and say at the end of the day, okay, Georgia still won by 4 touchdowns in that game.
Right. We're better because we're better. That's the thing about it. Mm-hmm. We're more talented than Arkansas was. But, I mean, I was happy that Kirby put DeJuan back in the game. You know, even the game was out of hand. Just put him back in there and just allow him to, you know, continue to get some live game reps and everything. And today, I'll be honest with you, JC, I don't know where they're going at the quarterback position. I honestly don't. I know everybody's JT Daniels time and all that, but I know Kirby's main thing with him is, can he protect himself? You know, that's the one thing about it. I saw that big old knee brace he had on. It's like, okay, well, I mean, I know he's coming off the ACL, and there's plenty of quarterbacks that wear the knee brace, especially on their lead leg a lot of times. But, you know, I don't know, and I don't think anybody will know until 7:30, until tonight, and when the offense runs out for the first series against Auburn tonight. But I just thought collectively that second half is what you need, because the thing with Georgia, if we want to get to where we want to go, we got talent everywhere on the field. The one question mark, and it's the one position where you can't have question marks, and that's at the quarterback position. So it's either going to help us or it's going to hinder us right now. And we can't play that way tonight, actually, if we're going to beat Auburn, because Auburn's a good football team. And you saw last week against Kentucky, Bo Nix continues to grow. He's continuing to get better and better. He's still got that gunslinger mentality. And when you got Seth Williams, I mean, that dude there, I mean, he's going to be playing on Sundays. All right? Yeah. That, I mean, he is a grown man. And so when you look at that, I mean, they've got to take opportunities, because the one thing about Bo, he'll give you one, though.
Yeah, the sad thing about Seth is the fact that he may be only the third best wide receiver in that state for them right now. It is College Football Game Time with you here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, as we get you ready for Georgia-Auburn. Taking a look back at last week here as we get things started. LSU, of course, goes down. Only 4 returning starters from the team that won the national championship game the previous season. And, of course, Jamar Chase, who was supposed to be back, he sits out, opting out for the season. Stingley, who is arguably the best, not just the best corner in America, but maybe the best defensive player in America, he's not in the game either, and because of all of it, KJ Costello goes off for a SEC record 623 passing yards. And, you know, I got to be honest, I'm not overly surprised at what happened. I'm not surprised that Mississippi State found a way to get a victory in this game. I thought that LSU was overhyped, and I thought that they were – I couldn't understand why – a team with that much turnover was looked at as being the number 5 or 6 team. And I understand it's early rankings and different things like that. But it just, to me, didn't seem like this was a team that was ready to be a top 5 or top 6 team when you've lost your offensive identity, you've lost your defensive coordinator, you've lost all of your really key assets besides just the quarterback play. So, kudos to KJ Costello and Mike Leach for, you know, what they did. But, you know, I think the bigger thing is that Mississippi State went into LSU and found a way to get a victory out of all of that. Give him credit. Listen, give Mike Leach credit. 1-0 in the SEC. Kyle Trask in Florida, another impressive performance. We talked about this game last week in the sense that Ole Miss defensively, they can get after the quarterback, but their secondary is not any good. Their secondary is bad, to be charitable at it, and Kyle Trask took advantage of that. 6 touchdown passes. I think that was an eye-opener. You're talking about a guy who I think he threw for like 25 or 21 touchdowns last year. You know, obviously he's a guy that's looked at as the preseason first team all SEC quarterback. Chris Goforth is we appreciate you joining us here this morning. But you know, am I surprised that Kyle Trask in Florida ran up a bunch of touchdowns against that secondary? No, I'm not. But still, listen, Florida did what they had to do, and they went down there and they beat a mediocre SEC team, and give Florida credit. I think at least their offense may open some eyes this year with what they're capable of.
Yeah, well, obviously Kyle Trask, I mean, we saw it. I mean, 6 touchdowns, and then, you know, Kyle Pitts, I mean, what a nightmare matchup. And I know we're going to talk about it in a little bit, but my gosh, if you're South Carolina, what do you do? How do you cover that guy? Who are you going to put on him? Because he is such a mismatch problem. So just kind of, and I know you're talking a little bit about last week in the SEC, John, and I don't know how you felt about it, but coming into this year, it seemed like, you know, we kind of thought, well, this might be a down year for SEC quarterbacks. And then you see, you know, Kyle Trask throws for a bunch of touchdowns. KJ Costello breaks a 27-yard SEC record for touchdown yards passing in a game with 623. And I didn't think Mac Jones, he didn't put up gaudy numbers last week for Alabama, but he sure was efficient last week for the Crimson Tide.
Well, I think part of it is, Chris, I don't think you have a lot. I don't think you have a lot of great SEC defenses this year. I think you could look and say that some of these defensive personnel that some of these teams play. I was just mentioning about the fact that Ole Miss's secondary is terrible. I mean, they were terrible last year, and they weren't going to get any better this year. Tony Connor and some of those guys aren't walking through the door for that team. They get after the quarterback, but their secondary was dreadful last year and was going to be dreadful this year. We know that any Mississippi State quarterback in that offense is going to put up a bunch of yards. I think people just assume because LSU, they've got the gold, they got the yellow helmet with the purple and it says LSU on there, that automatically that they're going to shut everybody down and out, and that's not the case. We talked last week, Chris. I think Mac Jones is the X factor in the SEC. If you told me that he ends up being the first team all SEC quarterback, and you saw it, Smith didn't even get involved in that game for a while. It was waddle, 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 waddle. And I'm telling you, we'll talk about this later on Max the Week, Chris. Jalen Waddle's maybe my favorite player in college football. I've been talking about it, you know, all offseason and when we kind of got started. I think he's going to have a monster breakout year. Like all the numbers that Judy and some of those guys have put up over the few years, there's nothing about Waddle that says that he can't put up some of the gaudiest numbers we've seen in a while for a wide receiver, especially in that conference.
He's awfully, awfully good, and I think you're right. You know, Mac Jones is going to benefit from the guys that he's got around him, not just those wide receivers, but I think Najee Harris will end up having a big year as well. You mentioned Ole Miss and that secondary, John. I think Ole Miss, this is the worst defense in the SEC. I mean, I literally think they could end up at the bottom of the league, even below, you know, Arkansas and Vandy by the time it's all said and done. I mean, I think there's some real issues on that side of the ball. The only way Ole Miss is going to win this year is Lane Kiffin's going to have to figure out how to outscore people. Otherwise, I don't think it happens. One of the other things that kind of stood out to me from last week is the fact that not a single team in the SEC had 200 yards rushing last week.
That's the problem.
Yeah, and I mean, listen, we're going to talk about Georgia and Auburn. Randy, Auburn doesn't have that number one running back. They really don't. I mean, if you thought, you know, Booby was, you know, a top flight back, hell, they're not even as good at running back as they were last year with him.
Yes, this is correct, JC. And Chris told me that stat earlier this week, and I was like, wow. And you look at it, is it going to a different direction? When you look at this Auburn offense, it's a Chad Morris offense with some of Gus Malzahn mixed in there. And so I don't know what they're going to do at the running back position. You thought they might have had the solution, but, I mean, Bo Nix was the leading rusher last week. And it wasn't all on design runs. It was just scrambles that he got those yards. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting because I think Georgia needs to lean on the run game more this tonight against Auburn than they did last week.
Is it the Big 12 influence creeping into the SEC? I guess we'll see.
Hell no, Chris.
Wow.
We'll go around the SEC. We will do that next. It's brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. We'll get to it. Coming right back, it's College Football Game Time. Chris, John, and Randy on a Saturday morning on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. College Football Game Time on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It's time for us to go around the SEC. That's brought to you by ESOG, Engineered Solutions of Georgia. They are a proud partner of the Georgia Bulldogs. We'll talk a lot more about Georgia. We'll talk a little Georgia-Auburn here. And then coming up in about 20 minutes from now, Brandon Adams from Dog Nation. You can find him at Dog Nation Daily on Twitter. Brandon's going to be with us. We'll talk more about Georgia and Auburn. Guys, let's start. It's the Deep South's oldest rivalry, and it gets cranked up later on today. Georgia took a little while to get going on offense last week. John Chuckery, at some point in time, we're going to see JT Daniels today. I don't know what it's going to look like exactly with Georgia's offense, but I think the one thing that has to happen, you're talking about a top five defense from a year ago at Georgia with eight starters back. Those guys are going to have to take control of this game early and give that offense a chance to find its legs.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is, Chris, is that I don't see where Auburn is able to put enough big plays together to try to go after Georgia. And I'll guarantee you, Randy, Kirby Smart challenged his offensive line this week.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, let's talk about Auburn's defensive line. They didn't just lose a couple of Hammond Eggers along that line. Right. They lost one of the biggest wrecking crew guys in America in Derek Brown and Marlon Davidson, who was a first-team all-conference defensive lineman as well. So you don't just arbitrarily replace guys like that. You can talk about rebuilding and replace it, but you don't just replace guys like that. I'll guarantee you this week, Randy, in practice, that Georgia offensive line was tasked with, okay, we're going to lean on you this week. We got to run the football. We got to get back to some of our identity. And he's going to put, I think, a lot of pressure on those guys to get it done this week.
Like you said, JC, their identity. I'm almost positive. I know I've been knowing Kirby a long time. I know that he was hoarse after that butt chewing that he gave them at halftime. Mm-hmm. And this week, I know for a fact that practice was just as physical as it's been all season. I mean, all off season, training camp, whatever you want to call it. Because that is Georgia's identity. We can talk about monkeying and all this spread. No, that's the identity of what Georgia wants to do is run the football. So there's no doubt about that. I think defensively, as long as they keep everything in front of them and rally to the ball, they'll be fine. Just like you said, they can't give up that big play. And that's what, you know, that's what Bo Nix is looking for right there with his receiver. So if they can keep everything in front there, I mean, they're a fine tackling team. They get guys on the ground, but this is all about the offense. And the one thing that they got to do and running the ball would help them, they got to get in a great rhythm. They never were in rhythm at all last Saturday up at Arkansas in that first half. They never got to, because every time it seemed like they had a positive play, it was either a penalty or a negative game play. They have got to find a way to keep going forward and not keep shooting themselves in the foot, because after the halftime, when Kirby went in that locker room and gave them that butt chewing, there were no more penalties. They played like we expect them to play, but I mean, it all boils down to the quarterback position. I don't know if JT's going to play today. I know, I mean, and we're going to have Brandon, my man BA, on in the next segment, so he may be able to shine some light on it. But I mean, it don't matter who's playing quarterback. If they give up the big plays, they're going to lose this game anyways. So they can't give up the big plays to Auburn today.
Randy, Georgia won this game 21-14 a year ago.
Yeah.
Will 21 points win it today? Yeah. I kind of think so.
Yeah, I think it will. I think it will. And because of everything that JC said about that, ain't no more Marlon Davidson. Ain't no more Derek Brown. Now, they got Big Cat, and he's a big-time player. And they got Britt, who's a fine inside linebacker. But I don't trust their secondary. But, hell, you can't expose a secondary if your quarterback can't throw the football. I mean, that we can always say, oh, they got a young guy here and this and that. Hell, if you can't throw the football to your receivers, then you don't give them a chance to exploit it. So I just look forward, you know, the biggest thing that Georgia has to do is they got to stay in rhythm early. And it always, you know, when Georgia's rolling, they always win on first down. They always win on first down. It's either the four-yard carry and then you second and manage, but where you can still have the run-pass option. That's where they need to be a lot today.
It's College Football Game Time here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We've got another ranked matchup happening today. It's the 3:30 kickoff on CBS today. 13th-ranked Texas A&M goes against number 2-ranked Alabama. Guys, I think there's a lot of legit reasons to be concerned about Texas A&M on offense. John Chuckery, if you go back to last year, at the end of the season, you go back to the bowl game last year, they didn't look right on offense back then. There is not a downfield, deep threat, big-time playmaker anywhere right now on this Texas A&M offense, and it just doesn't look good for them right now.
You know, we talked about this last week, about they don't have those outside playmakers that we got so used to with the Mike Evans and the Christian Kirks and guys like that. They just don't have enough of those guys. And then, you know, also this week, too, Chris, they had another one of their defensive backs that opted out for the season. Now, albeit he wasn't a starter, but, I mean, he was one of their nickel defensive backs and did get a good bit of playing time. And, Chris, I look at this game. Yeah, they struggled to stop Vanderbilt's wide receiver. What's his name? Amir Abdul-Rahman, who had a really nice game and is a nice wide receiver, but he literally like caught half of the passing yards that Vanderbilt had in that game.
Right.
What the hell are they going to do with those two guys today running around? I mean, what are they? What do they think? They think Rahman was a handful. Abdul-Rahman was a handful to try to slow down. What are they going to do with those two guys running all over the field? Because you maybe didn't hear this. I've been all over. Jalen Waddle might be my favorite player in college football.
He is an amazing player, and you saw that last week with just the catches. Now, you know, because of what they had at wide receiver the past two seasons before this one, don't kick him the ball,
right?
Just don't kick him the ball. But now you had a situation where, I mean, this young man is that dude. I mean, he has taken over. Because you lose two top 15 wide receivers in one draft in the first round of the NFL draft, and then you got these two guys behind him. I mean, they are so loaded. And I thought Mac played a great game last week. I thought Najee was great. But I tell you what, that defense, man, they look like the old Bama defense. Mm-hmm. I know they gave us some stuff to Missouri late, and that kind of ticked off them. But I think they're going
to
be fine.
Yeah, look, this is for Texas A&M today. If you're going to hope to have a prayer in this game, you've got to be able to play a little game of keep away. And, guys, I think the biggest key for Texas A&M in this game is going to be the play of Kellen Mond. I know we say that every week, and frankly, we talked all summer that, you know, how much better Texas A&M could be with all the guys they had come back. Frankly, they look exactly like they did last year this year, as far as I'm concerned. But Kellen Mond, the last 2 years, has run for over 100 yards against Alabama in each of those games. They've got to have that from him today, whether that's a quarterback draw. They've got to do something, utilize his legs in that game. He's not going to win this game with his arm. I don't know if he can win it with his legs, but he at least gives them a chance to stay in it if he can make some plays with his legs today.
Well, Chris, also, you look at the next few games for A&M, you know, talking about their offense. They've got Bama, and it's Miss State, and who's the other? There's one of the other good offenses in the SEC as well. They've got to start finding a way to score some points because they're going to go up the next few weeks. And I know Alabama and Miss State are two of the next three teams.
They got Florida next week.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, Florida, Alabama, Mississippi State coming up here very quickly. They're not going to beat those teams 10-9. I mean, they're not holding any of those offenses down. So, they're going to have to find a way to put some points up on the board. By hook or by crook, their offense is going to have to get better and grow up pretty quickly, or they're going to get run out of some buildings over the next few weeks.
That's exactly what's going to happen. I know you, Chris, you're talking about the run. That ain't going to help. I think that Alabama's going to manhandle A&M today. I really do. I look at this game as, you know, I said it last week, fellas. Will the real A&M please stand up? Well, we don't know because they don't have – I mean, they recruit well, but they don't get – like JC, they don't have that big-time receiver. They got some nice tight ends, so maybe we might see them involved a little bit more. But, that defense, I mean, that was the one thing that I noticed last week watching Bama was they looked like that old two-gapping, get out the way, and let's go hit people in the mouth defense last week.
You know, Randy, very quickly, you know, we joked all last year, guys, about the fact that Nick Saban was – even with all of those guys that they had – He was so aggravated about the fact that they didn't run the football effectively, especially in the first part of the season. They got better as the year went along, but they didn't run the football effectively, and they weren't a great defensive team. And I know they lost Moses right at the very beginning of the season, and you just can't replace a guy like that. But it was just kind of funny because Nick Saban was so upset about the run game and the defense. They ain't going to have that issue this year. That ain't going to be – that's right. I don't think that's going to be their downfall is all that. And, you know, sometimes maybe – you know, they joke about less talent, maybe more. Maybe having a couple of less weapons means that the guys that you do have, you can focus in harder on those guys and let them do what they do best.
I agree.
And you can't overstate the fact that having a healthy Dylan Moses back makes a big difference with this Alabama
and
defense.
Patrick Kane back there, too, is going to shut a lot of people down this year.
Oh, yeah. Pat Jr., that freshman linebacker they got, was Williams, was that his name? He's a head buster, too. I mean, they look like the old Alabama. And then, you know, I wanted to get to Mississippi State because I didn't see that coming, guys. I didn't. But the thing with Mississippi State is this. It looks like the old Kentucky game, you know, when Hal Mumme and then with all the crossing routes and everything. How did LSU just not go to zone on that? They kept getting beat, and then once the receiver broke the first tackle, there was nobody there. I don't think Costello is that damn good, 600 yards. But like you say, JC, you can't dumb your way to 600 yards passing.
Well, I'll tell you why. You know, because you still have a guy at head coach there that is be damned that I'm going to have to change what I do, and they still think it's Mississippi State just, you know, ham and egg in their way, you know, through this thing. I mean, and am I surprised that Mississippi State beat LSU? A little bit, yes. But at the same time, what I asked you guys last week, I mean, how do you look at LSU and even in preseason and even without the Pac-12 or Big Ten, tell me you think that's one of the five best teams in America? You just can't lose. You can't lose some of the greatest individual seasons we've ever seen in the history of the conference. I mean, look at Auburn. What was it, Chris? 2 years after Cam left, they were a three-win team. And I'm not saying that's going to happen to LSU, but you can't sometimes replace those guys that quickly. And if you tell me that Ed Orgeron is going to be more like Gene Chizik than he is Nick Saban, I'll be with you every day of the week.
Every day. I said, you know, I like Coach Orgeron. I just don't think he's a great head coach. But JC, you taught me as long as we've worked together, you taught me this. Hell, if your quarterback plays the way he played, if your quarterback has a historic year, more likely you're going to win.
Yeah.
That's the same thing happening here with the NFL team. You know, Matt Ryan had a damn great year, so that looked like Dan Quinn was a great head coach. And you're right, you can't replace what they lost, man, and then you lose your best. You lose maybe the best defensive player in America. He's not there. You start a freshman and a transfer, and you didn't give them any chance because this is the one thing we always talk about coaching. Adjust. How do you adjust? Okay, you see the LSU. We know you're big, bad LSU defense, secondary, all these things, but you can't cover these guys in man-to-man. Let's try to play a zone. Let's try to keep all this thing is running because it wasn't the downfield throws that was beating LSU last week. It was the underneath stuff, and then they weren't tackling. And then they break the tackle. Then you might stop them for a 7-yard game. Then it turns into a 37-yard game. That's what happened to LSU last weekend.
Well, for all the talk about Mike Leach's offense and, you know, throwing it all over the yard and all that stuff, the premise behind that offense, Randy, is you just take what the defense gives you. You know, you're not throwing 30-yard outs all the time. You're just, you know, it's the underneath stuff. You're using the passing game almost the way you would use the run game. Speaking of that, Colin Hill only had 7 attempts last week. Going forward, Randy, I think eventually some teams are going to have to back off a little bit because of the way they throw the ball. And when that happens, I think it's going to open up some lanes and some room for Colin Hill to run. He's not going to have a 100-yard rushing game this year, but I do think we'll see some games where he's going to get it more than 10 times.
Yeah, it was funny because when we were talking last week, I was like, hell, they're going to waste his last year. How are they going to use him? Well, they threw eight passes for over 130 yards.
Yeah.
So I mean,
it's just getting him out in space. Just get him the football out in space and go let him go do his thing.
How about Missouri at number 21, Tennessee today? That's a 12 o'clock kickoff on the SEC Network. Tennessee got some good news this week with Cade Mays, the Georgia transfer, being able to come over, and he's expected to be in the starting lineup today for Tennessee on that offensive line. Tennessee 1 of 11 last week on third downs. That certainly got to get better. And John Chuckery, I think Larry Roundtree at Missouri, He may be the best back in the SEC that nobody talks about. He averaged almost 5 yards a carry last week, and I think if Missouri's going to try to win, you got to get Roundtree involved. But in going back and watching that game last week between them and Alabama, I don't know, and maybe it's a learning curve there for Eli Drinkwitz in his first year as a head coach. You're not going to win in the SEC trying to run sideline to sideline. Defenses are too fast. At some point in time, you got to get Larry Roundtree running downhill with a full head of steam.
I agree with you. And let's also, too, Chris, let's give Guarantano a little bit of credit. He was efficient. 19-31, didn't turn the football over, had the one touchdown, had the one rushing touchdown. You know, they don't – look, Tennessee's not a spectacular team. But if Guarantano can give them some consistent quarterback play – not make a big, a bunch of mistakes and things like that. There's no reason for Tennessee not to win this game today. There's nothing about this game that Tennessee at home to open up. But if Guarantano can replicate the kinds of performance that he had last week against South Carolina, they can be pretty good. They can be a team that could steal a game here or there from somebody.
A couple other games going on today in the SEC. You got South Carolina, Florida, Ole Miss, Kentucky, yeah. LSU, Vandy. We'll try to get to some of those games coming up a little bit later on today. Brandon Adams of Dog Nation, you can find him on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily. He joins us next. We'll talk more about Georgia and Auburn when we come back. It's College Football Game Time, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Yeah. It's College Football Game Time here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. College Football Game Time brought to you in part by Dos Equis. Make social distancing more interesting with Dos Equis, a most interesting beer. Chris Goforth alongside John Chuckery, Randy McMichael. Glad to be hanging out with you on a Saturday morning. And we've got a full slate of college football that we'll be talking about. We're going to connect with Brandon Adams at Dog Nation here in just a moment. We'll get his thoughts on today's matchup between Georgia and Auburn. And then coming up later on today, in our final hour at 11:20, Takeo Spikes, former Auburn linebacker, will spend some time with us as well. We'll get his thoughts on the Deep South's oldest rivalry as it renews itself today. And coming up at 10 o'clock, guys, we'll go kind of across the nation, talk about some of those Big 12 games today and a few of the other matchups around the country as well. Let's finish up here before we connect with Brandon on some of these games going on. Ole Miss and I understand Brandon's good, so let's hop right into it. Brandon Adams Dog Nation, he joins us. You can find him on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily. Make sure you check out his podcast. Dog Nation, you can find it every single day if you're a Georgia football fan year-round talking Georgia football. Brandon, appreciate you giving us some time today. Look, I'm going to go ahead and ask it because it's the question I think everybody's been talking about all week. JT Daniels gets cleared at quarterback. What should we expect from him today? How much do you think and how soon do we see JT Daniels?
Well, first of all, it's great to be with you guys. And Kirby Smart's obviously been intentionally mysterious about all of this. There's a part of me that's skeptical that Daniels is going to have a huge impact on this game, either because he's not quite as healthy as maybe it's been let on, or he's missed enough practice reps recently where he's maybe just a little behind schedule with his development. Now, that's a prediction, maybe sure to be wrong. And yet that's my feeling going into this, that this game still, for the most part, belongs to the two quarterbacks we saw last week. A lot of Stetson Bennett, maybe some of Dwan Mathis. I guess I'd maybe be surprised if Daniels doesn't play a single snap, doesn't play at all. And yet somehow I don't quite think he's going to be playing the majority of the snaps today. That's kind of the sense that I get about this, just based on kind of what the chatter has been as of late. Kirby clears him, or at least announced that he's cleared. Maybe that gives Gus Malzahn something to think about, but you wonder how ready he truly will be.
And with that being said, B.A., do you think that they may go two quarterbacks with Dwan Mathis and Stetson Bennett? We know Stetson came and rallied the troops. We know he's not the long-term solution, or he may be, because it seems like the team rallied around him. But as far as Dwan Mathis, I mean, do you look at him as still has a possibility to be a quarterback that can take his places?
Oh, I think that Dwan Mathis probably still has a role today. And maybe for some Georgia fans, that doesn't feel like great news because Mathis didn't play very well last week. I think even Dwan would be the first to admit that. But Kirby's going to change his mind slowly on this kind of stuff. He talked a lot this week about the fact that they've been making these evaluations during practice and this has kind of been kind of a long haul decision. So from that standpoint, DeJuan clearly had showed them something to earn the right to take the first snaps last week. Here's the thing. Stetson Bennett actually played, you know, pretty well a week ago, but he's playing a much better defense this week in Auburn. So if we are to kind of assume for a moment that maybe JT Daniels isn't fully ready to go, that at a certain point in time, Georgia may be glad for some of what Mathis can provide. In addition to being a good runner, which he obviously is, he's also got a really big arm too. And, you know, if you need to make that big shot play 50, 60 yards down the field, you know, Mathis's arm might be the best one to deliver that throw. So I think this game belongs to Stetson Bennett, at least the majority of those snaps. But I do think at least one other quarterback for Georgia will play. And in some role, in some fashion, DeJuan Mathis still being included, I guess I would be surprised if that doesn't occur, at least in some form.
B.A., we knew it would be a little bit of a work in progress with Todd Monken coming in. And obviously the offensive line had its struggles last week. But I was curious to see what they were going to do with James Cook in kind of his touches. You saw seven carries last week. He did have the fumble, couple of receptions. You think in this offense that he's going to be kind of that utility guy, that they're going to find a way to get him the football in a lot of different ways? It just feels like he's the kind of guy that you want to try to find a way to get him in some space. And I wonder, you know, if we don't see a big mix this year between receptions and rushes for him as part of this offense.
Well, I will say that while the national media has certainly focused a lot on the Georgia quarterback situation with good reason, for Georgia fans who kind of obsess over every play, what Cook didn't do last week has been almost as big a story as anything else. I don't think that James had a very good day last Saturday, and I really expected him, for a lot of the reasons that you just mentioned, to be a huge part of the offense this year. For those of us who've seen Todd Monken offenses prior to him coming to Georgia, James Cook just seems like the kind of player that he would use, very well. And last week, it just didn't really happen. I don't put that on Monken so much. You know, even though the Georgia results weren't great a week ago, I didn't have any real problem with the Todd Monken game plan. They just had a hard time, you know, asserting certainly the running game as well as they would like to have. I think this is a big day for James Cook today, because while he is potentially effective in the passing game, as you said, you've also got to be a traditional kind of tailback too. You know, Kirby has typically liked that tandem of running backs. Didn't do that as much last year, but likes typically to have a couple of backs that get a lot of carries. And if Cook doesn't bounce back today and have a better day against a better defense, then I think that Georgia may start looking a little more at some of the other running backs, Kenny McIntosh or a true freshman, Kendall Milton, assuming he's healthy now after being a little banged up during the summer. You know, there's another freshman named Dejon Edwards who might eventually get in the mix. I would say that today is probably a pretty good day for James Cook to remind folks why he was touted during the offseason. Otherwise, you might start seeing a distribution of those carries, you know, go to some of these other running backs in a little more prominent role.
Brandon Adams from Dog Nation Daily. He's with us here on College Football Game Time on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Brandon, are we doing too much assuming that this Georgia offense is just going to kind of fix itself?
Well, I think that it's going to be a work in progress at the very least for most of the season. I think one of the things that's a little bit unpleasant if you're a Georgia fan to go back and look at last year was just how broken it was by the end of the year last year, you know, through the month of November. This group just didn't play well at all. And so when you're talking about a total rebuild, which is what kind of Georgia needed to do after the way that this group kind of played post-Florida, you know, last year, you know, the thought that it can be fixed quickly, maybe that was a little too ambitious, especially when there's this currently unsettled situation at quarterback. Now, if Daniels is fully healthy, and if that happens today or next week or some other time, then maybe all of a sudden the process gets kind of sped up a little bit. But right now, Georgia is going to be forced to win games with its defense. And, you know, for what has been the calling card for Georgia, the running game, you know, Georgia made a big overhaul during the offseason. The offensive linemen got lighter. You know, last year the two tackles, both first-round picks, were 330-plus pounds. You know, Georgia has, you know, much, much lighter, people might say more athletic offensive linemen now, and that's supposed to fit what Matt Luke wants to do, the offensive line coach, and what Monken, the coordinator, wants to be able to do. But that also means you can't just stand there and maul people the way that maybe, you know, Georgia kind of used to do. So this is an offense right now in transition. I believe eventually it can be a transition for the better. But as you saw last week against Arkansas, and to go back to your original question, it is not going to be an immediate fix.
Hey, B.A., speaking of that defense, you said post-Florida, how about pre-Florida too, that offense? But anyway, defensively, yeah. How many guys did Kirby play last week? It seemed like every time I look up, it's like a hockey line shift as far as the defensive line and linebackers.
Yeah, I don't think anybody played more than, 30-something snaps or whatever. I mean, as you said, it is like a hockey line shift. And I think Kirby does that for a couple of reasons. First of all, I think it keeps morale high. You know, when you have a lot of recruits, they all want to play. I think Kirby tries to find a way to get them involved so that they can feel like they're part of the, you know, program, then go back to their hometown and folks can say, hey, I saw you on TV and stuff like that. I think Kirby is generally pretty good at that. And I do think that the stamina that's built up by having fresh bodies in there over the course of the game also works to Georgia's effect pretty well, too. You know, no matter who you have in the game, though, today against Auburn, Georgia does have to be impactful with the players who are playing. They can't just limit yards. They can't just limit points, something that Georgia's obviously been really good at. You've got to get after the quarterback. Georgia sacked Bo Nix twice a year ago. They may need more than that today because I would say this Auburn receiving core is probably better now than it was a year ago, a little more seasoned. I mean, Chad Morris is the Auburn offensive coordinator. Is an impactful coordinator in a way that maybe, you know, Auburn hasn't had in a while, assuming that Gus Malzahn lets him do, you know, what he wants to do. So, you know, for the guys that Georgia is rotating in, especially the outside linebacker spot, when someone is in the game, whoever it is, they got to find a way to get off blocks, get to the quarterback, and wreak that havoc in the offensive backfield because that's probably what Georgia's going to need today.
And, B.A., to piggyback off that, you're right. I mean, it's a good group of wide receivers with Williams and Stove and Schwartz and those guys with Auburn. I think that's the fun matchup today is watching Georgia's secondary against the wide receiver group. And I think what's interesting, B.A., I think you saw this last week against Kentucky. You know, the way Chad Morris is going to use his wide receivers this year, we kind of got into that mindset of Auburn that the way they use their wide receivers is kind of off the play action and let's hit those guys deep. Let's get them deep downfield and hit those big shots. He's going to take those guys and really run them all over the field. And I think you kind of saw a little bit of that. I think that's going to be kind of the fun matchup is it's not going to be just trying to cover way downfield against this group now. You're going to have guys running all over the place for Auburn.
Yeah, I think if you want to see what Morris in particular is doing, I think Anthony Schwartz is a pretty interesting guy to look at because he's so fast. And, you know, maybe in the past that would have been Gus Malzahn's jet sweep guy. Maybe over the course of the years that offense got a little stale. You know, Morris, if he truly has influence over this offense, being creative, how he uses him, that'll be a pretty good indicator of that. And then with Seth Williams, you know, so many people are going to compare Williams to Pickens, but I think it really is true that they are similar players in that I don't know that either guy runs away from defensive backs, but when the ball is in the air, they just go get it. And so if you're Georgia today, one of the things that you're a little concerned with is you can have a great game plan and you can have good coverage on Williams. But when the ball is in the air, he still sometimes just finds a way to win those battles. And in what I expect to be kind of a low-scoring game, one or two big plays can change the entire outcome. And so both for Pickens on the Georgia side and Williams on the Auburn side, you know, even when they're just sort of, you know, blanketed with coverage, there's no guarantee that either of those two receivers can't still find a way to high-point that football and come down with it.
Brandon Adams of Dog Nation. You can find Brandon on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily. Check out his podcast, Dog Nation Daily. It's available wherever you download your podcast from. Brandon, this Georgia-Auburn rivalry, it's been a fun one over the years, and it's one that typically comes later on in the SEC season. Is there an advantage to either side playing this game so early this year?
Over the course of years, there will be an advantage to Auburn because Auburn was in a situation where it didn't like having, you know, as you're aware of, you know, Georgia and Alabama, its two biggest rivals, kind of crunched right there in the month of November, especially when those two road games popped up every other year. So if you want to extend this over the course of, you know, a decade or so, I think Auburn will be glad to move the game out of October. As far as this particular game today, I don't know that, you know, necessarily has any kind of impact on it. I think one of the fun, you know, kind of subplots to all this is the fact that I do believe this has kind of turned into a real rivalry and not just a traditional rivalry. And the fact that I don't think Smart and Malzahn like each other very much. I don't think either have to apologize for that. This is a competitive industry. You know, having a healthy distaste for your opponent would almost seem natural. So I think one of the things that's fun about this rivalry now is that the people who are involved with it actually treat it that way.
B.A., I've got about a minute left, B.A. You see the tight ends catch balls last week? Because I know I did.
I know you like that.
You know that. So, I mean, are we going to continue to get Darnell Washington and Fitzy and all of them involved? Do you think this is the key to the Georgia offense is involving the tight end?
Well, I think it is, and I think that's one of Munkin's influences here, and I think eventually it's maybe even more profound than it was last Saturday, because at some point in time they're going to get Trey McKitty back, the transfer from Florida State, and I definitely think they'll involve him in the offense. So, yeah, that's why I liked the Munkin game plan a week ago, even though the results weren't particularly spectacular. And Randy, I know you know this better than anybody, they were involving tight ends in, like, real routes in a way that just wasn't happening a year ago.
Yeah.
Brandon Adams, Appreciate Dog Nation. Man. Brandon, thanks for giving us some time, thanks, man. I hope we get a chance to do this again.
Appreciate
it,
B.
I loved it, guys. Enjoy the football weekend.
Brandon Adams, Dog Nation. Again, you can find him on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily. Check out his podcast. If you're a Georgia football fan, you can get it downloaded to your device every single day, not just during football season, but year-round. Georgia football talk. All right, let's go across the nation. We'll take a look at some of the games going on today in the Big 12, including Oklahoma trying to get it cranked back up. Number 9, Texas hosting TCU as well. That's a little Choklahoma there, Randy. Hang on, we'll come back. We'll get to it. It's college football game time. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.